Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone. Today, myself, Dr. Toni, and Dr. Lisa, we're talking about what you need to know about stress, cortisol, and your adrenal glands. Because, I mean, we talk a lot about stress and, you know, the idea of stress. Everyone has stress. And a lot of us tend to think, oh, it's just, you know, what's going on in my head. You know, stress can definitely start in your head with a worry, but there's definitely downstream effects in your body, especially when we're talking about hormonal changes. This is something that we've talked about in multiple episodes so far. You know, things are actually happening in your body because of stress. So it's not just about stressing out or worrying. Again, there is a physiological impact to this. So we really want to kind of help you understand this and kind of break it down so you can kind of get a sense of really what stress is, how your adrenal glands actually work, what cortisol, your stress hormone, does, and then really look at, okay, what can we do about it? How can we reduce the impact of stress on our body? Because, you know, there's a number of different research studies that is showing that stress is related to, you know, even up to 90% of all illness. According to the American Psychological Association, chronic stress is linked to 6 of the leading causes of death. That's heart disease, cancer, lung illnesses, accidents, liver cirrhosis, and suicide. Now, and that's, you know, a part of the stats in the United States, but I would say that it is most likely that that is, you know, across the board, not only for Canada, but even around the world as well. You know, they found that more than 75% of all doctor visits are for stress-related ailments and complaints. So a lot of us are dealing with stress, especially now, and there's always going to be stress. So let's really look at how we can really effectively deal with stress so that there's less impact on us. And, you know, I'd even want to kind of start with even talking about a bit of our experience with stress, right, Lisa?
Definitely. Yeah, let's jump in. Did you want me to go first?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Okay, great. So looking back, I guess as a child, I guess I did suffer from some mild anxiety. I remember feeling like anxious about certain situations or doing presentations. I wasn't paralyzed about it, but I would be kind of like nervous in those situations. And I look back and I did suffer from sleep issues, but I just thought that was normal. Like I'd wake up a lot or it would take a while for me to fall asleep. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, where did that come from? So we can actually inherit certain tendencies from like past generations, from our families, and I'm not blaming my parents, but it's also looking at, you know, pivotal events in your life that have happened too. So I was a twin. My mom didn't find out she was having twins until 3 days before. So I'm sure that was a big stress to her, but we were born premature and I had to stay in the hospital a couple weeks longer than my sister. So I was there by myself. Of course, my parents were coming and visiting regularly, but I didn't have that same connection, skin-to-skin contact that I would if I was at home. So I wondered, did that prime my system to be in what's called like a sympathetic overdrive? So I was kind of like, okay, here I am. I'm in the hospital. Of course, I had a very loving childhood and I'm sure that made up for it. But sometimes events like that may prime our system to be either like what we call like hypersensitive or more of like a high cortisol tendency. So I'd say that was my tendency in school. I never needed, you know, treatment. Maybe I could have benefited from it, but I was still highly functioning and had a lot of friends and did well in school. But that's been my tendency mostly through life. So if there's a stressful situation, I'm the type that, you know, I might not sleep as well. I'm trying to get a lot done. I'm burning the candle at both ends. I'm staying up late. And that can serve you only for so long. Eventually, you're going to have to pay for those effects and then you can crash. So even looking at, you know, post-pregnancy, I had breastfeeding challenges. You can listen back to one of the first few episodes where we're talking about that. But I really wasn't sleeping much. So I felt a lot of postpartum anxiety. I couldn't settle down. It was hard to relax. So I was like, go, go, go. And in that high cortisol phase, which we'll talk about more. And even when I stopped breastfeeding and Stuart was sleeping, I still couldn't sleep. So eventually, from being that wired, I did end up crashing. So I moved from kind of what we call the resistance phase. You're kind of going through the motions, tired and wired. And then I did crash and I just went through like a burnout period and actually found out I had a thyroid issue as well. So that was impacted by the stress. But that's kind of been my journey. And right now with the pandemic going on, I'm shifting more back into that high cortisol tendency where I'm not sleeping enough. I'm trying to do a bit too much. I'm not prioritizing my rest and sleep. So I need to step back and prioritize that so I don't burn out in the end. But Tony, what's your, you know, adrenal gland journey been like for you?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've been really aware of how easily I can get stressed out. I mean, as a kid, I really thought of myself as high strung. I was pretty sensitive and like you, definitely had issues sleeping. I was a light sleeper. And so having that awareness of myself, I especially, you know, before getting pregnant, while pregnant and after being pregnant and in, you know, in my postpartum phase, I've just been really conscious of not burning out, because there have been times in my life, especially, you know, when I was a teenager and different times in my life as an adult, where I have really felt burnt out and really felt just tired, low energy. And, you know, different methods of supporting my adrenal glands has really helped with that. And we'll definitely talk more about that. And I know that I just, because I know that that's already a possibility for me, I really want to prevent that burnout, especially now while we're in this, you know, pandemic, really, you know, strange state of all of our lives and all of the world. I just want to really do them as much as I can to prevent that burnout. So we'll definitely kind of talk about how, you know, how that can happen and how we can do that. And especially the fact that, you know, stress isn't just emotional, but it can be physical too. And have, you know, causes that are emotional and causes that are physical, but also have effects that are emotional and effects that are physical. That being said, not all stress is bad. So we really, it's really important to you know, think, okay, there is stress in our lives. It's not that stress is across the board a bad thing. There are stressors that can be good, and we actually really kind of need stress in order to survive.
Definitely. Yeah. If we think about, like, why do we have the stress response? So let's say, you know, back in the day when we weren't living in houses or cities, we were, you know, hunting for our food, and we always had to be aware of predators. So let's say we saw a bear or a tiger coming towards us. That stress response would help our body ideally be able to run away and protect itself. So when the stress hormone, so typically adrenaline is secreted, the initial stress hormone in an acute stressor like a bear coming after you. So that stress hormone tells your heart rate to increase and your blood vessels to dilate to your muscles so that they are getting blood flow. So you can run away from that predator. Your pupils dilate so you can see more clearly. Blood flow shuts down to the digestive system because digestion is not a priority in that moment. Survival is. reproduction is temporarily on hold too. So hormone balance and fertility are not a priority. Your body's just trying to survive. So ideally, you know, with that stress response, okay, you see the bear, you have the stress response, you run away from the bear, and your body has time to heal and recover and repair, and those stress hormones go down. But unfortunately, in the world we're living in, we're hit with one stressor after another. And it could be perceived stress, like we might be stressed about doing a presentation, whereas another person might love doing presentations at work. But we have the bear, we're stuck in traffic, we're late for work, we have to do the presentation, and then throw on, we're not sleeping enough, we're deficient in different vitamins and minerals. So these chronic stressors or accumulative stressors then is too much for our system to handle, right, Tony? So we get into the negative effects.
Absolutely. Because we need that fight or flight response that you were talking about, that, you know, that we inherited in order to survive, you know, coming across bears in the wild. The real issue is when that fight or flight response keeps getting stimulated, or when you can't get out of that fight or flight response and you can't recover, but you're just stuck in that cycle. Because again, being in the fight or flight response can be a good thing, especially when it's temporary. You know, especially when, you know, we have, you know, a good stress or something that you're looking forward to, or there's some excitement, or you know that there's going to be a positive or a reward for it. You know, whether it's, you know, again, a presentation that may have a real positive spin on it for some people, or something like a job interview or writing an exam. I mean, these are kind of big events that can bring us further and forward in our lives and reach certain goals, which then can, you know, trigger our reward system in our brain and have that feeling of reward. And those stresses can also really benefit the body too. You know, it stimulates our body. If we didn't have any stress in our lives, you know, we'd just be kind of lying around like vegetables. But having that stimulus can really help to support our immune system, because it increases the production of heat shock proteins, which then allows for our immune system and our bodies to respond to our environment, which is important. That can increase resistance to different infections and cancer, and it can really reduce inflammation and allergies to happen, and can really boost our energy and support our productivity to a certain point as well. And that's where, you know, again, the issue comes up when those stressors are lasting for too long. You know, we can look at what some of those stressors could be. You know, a general worry, anxiety, past trauma that hasn't been properly processed or treated can be a real issue. But then we're also talking about more physical things as well. It can be exposure to different toxins. It could be mold exposure. It could be different bacterial infections or viral infections. And there also are other physical stressors as well. You know, things like being dehydrated, things like having pain or injury or certain, you know, structural misalignments in the body. Or again, we've got a lack of sleep or time zone change, or even, you know, shift workers and not having a real proper rhythm and routine and being able to follow a circadian rhythm of the earth as well.
Totally. So yeah, it's like the list is limitless, right? And right now we're all under, you know, pretty extreme stress with the whole world and the life, our lives as we've known them to be, like, been totally turned upside down. So we need, especially during this time, to have outlets for stress, which we'll talk about soon. But so some stress, like you said, Dr. Tony, can be good, but then when it's one after another, it becomes a problem. So we go through what's called like a cortisol, like a stress response curve, if you will. So let's say, if you could picture like a graph. So if you have an acute stressor, your adrenaline increases, and ideally it goes down. So it curves up and then it goes down. But let's say you have have one stressor after another or chronic stress, then the other long-term stress hormone, cortisol, is secreted from the adrenal glands. And I should back up a bit because you might be like, wait a minute, what are the adrenal glands? These are where our stress hormones are produced, among other hormones too. But they're two little triangles that sit above your kidneys. So if you were to put your hand on your, you know, hips, lower back area, you're most likely contacting those adrenal glands. So they secrete those stress hormones, adrenaline, cortisol, among other hormones as well. So when you have that acute stress, so you secrete adrenaline, ideally it goes down because you've run away from the bear or whatever that stressor was. But then when long-term stress kicks in or one after another stressor you're exposed to, that cortisol increases and it becomes high. So you go through what's called the resistance phase of stress. So this could be while you're, you know, working towards finishing your thesis or you're studying for your exam period or you have a deadline at work. So you're able to kind of push through. You might start to show signs of stress though, like you're functioning, but you might be tired and wired. You might start to feel like warm or hot at night or sweaty. You might start to show some sleep issues. You might be needing, you know, things to keep you going like sugar or caffeine, but then possibly some alcohol, some wine at night to unwind because you're just tired and wired. So you're pushing through, you're able to get the work done, but there's some things that are changing. And let's say, you know, you reach that deadline, you finish your thesis. What typically happens, right, is that you get sick. When you're done that, you go on vacation, your body's just like said, that's it, I can't do anything else. You push me to the limits, you crash and you get sick and you're kind of wiped out for a few days or a few weeks, unfortunately. Sometimes that can happen when you're not even on vacation and it hits you before you're on a break, but that's called the exhaustion phase. So you have the alarm phase when you initially secrete stress hormones or release stress hormones. You get into the resistance phase. That's high cortisol. So you're kind of pushing through, but starting to show signs of symptoms. And eventually you then can go into the exhaustion or burnout phase, and that's low cortisol. And there's different symptom pictures with each of those phases, right, Tony? So we typically think like hot and sweaty if it's high cortisol. You can have high blood pressure, so that can go up. You might be like feeling flushed. You could be have more redness in your tissues. There's more inflammation. You can feel really tense, like your shoulders are to your ears. You might be experiencing some muscle aches and pains. And just generally, your body is like, you feel like really dry, like your skin's dry, your mucous membranes are dry. But then when you get to that exhaustion phase and that low cortisol, you can feel really like you're exhausted. It's hard to move. Some people are just so tired, they can't even physically move. They just have to sleep a lot. You can feel cold when there's low cortisol. You might look more pale and just like, your friends would say, oh my gosh, are you okay? Like, you don't look very well. You can retain a bit more water and have more swelling in your body. You might see ankle swelling, for example. And you might find it really hard to exercise. Like, your muscles are weaker. It's even harder to do what you would normally do, even for walking or gentle exercise. So you're just burnt out and you could have some low blood pressure, allergies, and be more susceptible to illness as well.
So yeah, I find that what's really important for us to kind of think about is, you know, so many of us are stuck in that resistance phase because there's a lot going on in our lives. I mean, especially, you know, there's a pandemic, there's a lot of things that can happen to us. But, you know, what's important to kind of look at is how we can make that stress tolerable so that we don't get into that stress becoming toxic or getting into an exhaustion phase. That's really key. Because again, bad things may happen in your life, whether it's a pandemic or, you know, a car accident or the death of a loved one. You know, these are things that are going to happen in our lives. Our lives aren't going to necessarily, you know, happen without these kind of big events or stressors happening. So what's really key is to make sure that we have enough resources to handle that stress and also having the support system to be able to really lean on as well. Especially as women, we really benefit when we're talking about stress with tending and befriending, with having family, friends, loved ones that we can talk to, that we can really you know, work out some of our worries and our anxieties and our concerns. And also a real key is to look at, you know, that fight or flight response, whether we're in a sympathetic nervous system response or a parasympathetic nervous system response. And, you know, the way you can think about it is thinking of the sympathetic nervous system response, that fight or flight, as being in the emergency room versus being in a parasympathetic nervous system response, being in a healing room or in a spa.
Ooh, I love that, Tony. That's a great analogy.
For sure. You know, how many of us want to be sitting in the emergency room and having to be in that state for long periods of time? And of course, not like physically driving there, but, you know, we want to think about this in our minds. So how many hours of the day is your mind in the emergency room versus how many hours of the day are you in the spa? Relaxing, allowing for proper recovery and proper immune system function and all of those things to be happening.
That's a great analogy, because I think especially as busy moms, right, we're in the emergency room in our minds so much. It's like, you know, oh, I got to book this appointment for my kid. Oh, what am I going to put on the table for dinner? Oh, I got to focus on work right now. And, you know, your mind's just racing. There's a lot of that rumination. So that's that emergency room. And that actually has physical changes in your body. So how do we tap into getting into the spa in our mind? And we'll get into that either the end of this episode or the next one. But that's really key, right? What does the spa look like for you and your mind and your daily activities?
Absolutely. Because if you are in that emergency room in your mind, trying to manage all of the things that are on your plate, especially if there are extra big stresses happening in your life, then there can be a real, a real feeling of a lack of control and a lot of uncertainty in your life. And that's where, again, things can really go downhill in terms of our physical health and our mental health when it comes to stress.
Definitely. Nope, that makes sense. And, you know, we can also, I think, Tony, at this point, maybe talk about the, like what we call the diurnal cortisol curve, because there are different times of the day where cortisol is high and cortisol is low. And, you know, that can be normal. So ideally, we wake up in the morning and within the first half an hour of waking, our cortisol is at its highest peak. So we're, you know, ready to jump out of bed and take on the day and get stuff done. And as the day goes on, that cortisol level starts to drop. So you can see it as kind of like a curve. So it starts off high, but not too high, at the right level for you. And then it starts to drop. So then by bedtime, it's nice and low and you can settle down and have a nice sleep. But a lot of people have what's called dysregulation. So your cortisol might be really low in the morning. So it's hard to get out of bed. It might peak at night and you're wired and you can't settle down and fall asleep. For some people, it could peak at 3 or 4 in the morning and they just can't get back to sleep. And so many factors can impact how and when your cortisol is released. And it starts a lot with first thing in the morning. So you want to see sunlight. So that'll tell your body to shut off the production of melatonin, the sleep hormone. So you want to do this as early as possible. And ideally you get outside. And then that'll help just to normalize your cortisol curve too. So you get up, you see sunlight, and then that's going to support your cortisol levels too. And melatonin will shut down. And then as the day goes on, you're seeing, you know, daylight still, and then your melatonin starts to be produced before bed. And then that can tell your body to lower the cortisol. But it's kind of interesting because we live in a world where we're actually really detached from our environment and sunlight and moonlight and all of that, not only from, you know, being inside and being exposed to artificial light all day, but we may wear sunglasses when we go outside. And of course, you know, you want to protect your eyes and you definitely should wear them, you know, most of the time, but you want to expose yourself to actually light without sunglasses for part of the day as well. And then we come inside at night and when it's supposed to be, you know, dim in the house, you know, we're supposed to be living by moonlight, we're actually turning on screens and TV and that blue light is affecting our melatonin. So that's really throwing off this circadian rhythm that involves cortisol and melatonin. So really starting to maximize that curve is, you know, going to bed at a good time, getting enough sleep and good quality sleep, getting out in the morning, seeing sunlight, even exercising in the morning can kind of support that natural cortisol spike first thing. And you're going to have more energy to exercise if you are following that natural rhythm.
Absolutely. And I think it really is important to kind of look at how we may be artificially lengthening our day or our evening with all of that artificial light and whatever we're doing during the night. If we are, again, exercising late at night or again, doing things that are going to keep our cortisol level high, so that melatonin can be released properly instead of allowing for that natural dip of our cortisol curve. Definitely keeping in mind that, again, cortisol isn't a bad thing. We need that stress hormone to be released. We just need it to be released at a certain time of the day, in the morning, rather than later on in the day.
Definitely. And it does have anti-inflammatory effects, as you mentioned, Tony, right? So you can have less pain and inflammation. Your immune system can work better. But yeah, the problem is, like you said, Tony, is if it's, you know, released at the wrong type of the day or if it's too high or too low at the wrong types of the day. And there's ways to test this as well. And we can get into that too. But I did want to throw in another, an acknowledgement that, you know, stress and burnout is a real thing. So we talked about at the beginning, you know, the percentage of diseases or the major diseases that are related to stress, and 75% of doctor visits are related to stress-related conditions. But the World Health Organization has actually coined what's called a burnout syndrome. So it's chronic workplace stress they're attributing it to that has not been successfully managed. So this is going to be part of their international classification of diseases. It'll go into effect January 2020. So this is an occupational phenomenon, this burnout. So according to the World Health Organization, this burnout is characterized by feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's job, or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job, and reduced professional efficacy. So it's starting to be really noted that burnout is a condition. So it's not something that, you know, we're just talking about. It's being recognized so that then there can be treatments and support for people that are going through it. And I think this day and age with multitasking, with, you know, all of us working online, I think that was supposed to make our lives easier and make us work less, but we're all really working a lot more. Burnout is going to be huge, especially after this pandemic, as people are juggling kids at home, working, cleaning their own houses, doing all the things that, you know, they might have had support with before.
Absolutely. And it's great that really the World Health Organization is really kind of bringing attention to this problem and validating it as well, because there is research out there that is showing that, with chronic toxic stress, our brain changes. You know, there's the part of the brain, the hippocampus, that's really important for memory. And with this chronic toxic stress, it actually shrinks so that our memory is impaired. So it's not an accident when you are under chronic stress and you're, you know, not remembering where you put the keys, or you're not necessarily, remembering, different appointments or different things in your schedule. It's because your brain is changing from stress. It also, you know, really weakens the connection in our prefrontal cortex, which you can kind of think about as your rational self. So when that is impacted, then it reduces your concentration, it reduces your focus, it reduces your decision-making ability and your impulse control. And it also reduces your regulation of the stress response. So then you're just caught in this vicious cycle of not being able to deal with stress properly. So again, that really does fit with what, you know, the World Health Organization talks about in terms of burnout and reducing your effectiveness in your job. Well, what about the effectiveness in the rest of your life too? Another point where the brain changes with stress as well is there's the fear center in the brain, the amygdala, which is really key for kind of, you know, stimulating your stress response to happen in the first place, where it kind of perceives a threat. Well, when your amygdala is impacted by stress, it actually first increases in size. So you become even more sensitive to stress and reactive to stress, almost like, you know, a toddler having a tantrum. You know, you cannot rationalize with a toddler having a tantrum. And with more and more stress and chronic stress, that's where we can start to act like toddlers having tantrums.
Mm-hmm. I know this is your brain on stress, right? Disclaimer, be careful. And I think right now, so many of us, we're really like short, right? We can respond so quickly to the smallest trigger, right? Because we're already under this external stress and pressure, and we just don't feel like we have the ability to cope. So stress can definitely impact the brain. And we can also look at other common, you know, concerns that people come to see us as naturopathic doctors. So they're like, you know what, I just can't seem to lose weight in my midsection. And cortisol actually gets our body to hold on to fat in the midsection because our body doesn't know what it's going to eat next. It's trying to hold on to reserves for survival. So it's really difficult to lose that weight. And it does impact how your insulin works. It increases your blood sugar levels in your bloodstream. And if you don't burn that off, that can be converted to fat. You know, if you have high cortisol, you crave a lot of carbs and sugar. So you're going to eat a lot more too, and that's going to contribute to the weight gain. If your cortisol's out of balance, that's also going to impact your thyroid. So it's a whole host of hormonal effects that make weight loss really, really difficult. So that's one, you know, real big concern. And then a lot of people know their digestive system is affected by stress. Like they're aware, okay, I get reflux, you know, of course, when I have, you know, too much alcohol, they will say, or spicy food, or eat late at night. But a lot of people notice the trigger with reflux and heartburn, and then also irritable bowel syndrome. So they might get more constipated or have more diarrhea or gas or bloating, because stress will impact the release of our digestive enzymes and our stomach acid, because that's not a priority in that moment. Survival is. So you try to eat in a stressed out state. You're not in that parasympathetic nervous system, that rest and digest and repair phase. Your body's like, what do I do with this food? And you're going to get gas or bloating because you're not going to break it down properly, and the bacteria is going to act on it as well. So definitely digestion, weight gain in the midsection. And then a lot of people complain about muscle tension. So yeah, your ears are up to your shoulders. You're basically waiting for that bear to chase you, even though it's, you know, being late to work or trying to get the kids ready in the morning. And that can translate also to headaches too. So whether it's from neck tension, jaw clenching, maybe you're grinding your teeth at night. Those are some common negative effects of cortisol imbalances or stress.
Definitely. And then even looking at kind of more longer term as well, that increase in inflammation in the body will also increase your oxidative stress, and that will accelerate our aging. And that is something that we don't want to happen. Inflammation and oxidative stress will cause you to age more quickly.
Yeah, we don't want that for sure. I definitely know I've aged a lot since I've had Stuart. Like, you could look at people that have kids versus don't have kids, and I'm sure the sleep thing plays a big part too, right? But in general, I'm like, whoa, I think I probably would look 5 years younger if I didn't have a kid, and I only have one, so.
Exactly. I feel the same way, Lisa.
So anything we can do to slow that down, I'm all in for sure.
Oh, for sure. And now you've already talked about thyroid, and absolutely, thyroid function and our thyroid hormones are impacted by stress and that cortisol release and that chronic cortisol release. But our other hormones are impacted. You know, when stress is high and cortisol is high, that absolutely will impact your body's ability to make your other sex hormones, especially, you know, something like progesterone, because of the different pathways of our hormones. Or when we're in stress, there can be a cortisol steal of our progesterone. So then, again, our fertility is impacted, but then it can also cause issues with libido. It can really worsen or be a big cause of PMS symptoms, whether it's cramps or whether it's headaches, migraines, irregular cycles, you know, other things, mood, especially before your period as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really important to note, right? Because if we're making a lot of cortisol, we can't make those other sex hormones like progesterone, testosterone. So like you said, yeah, libido tanks. That's a big concern I think we both see a lot of too. And our adrenal glands make testosterone. So that can be one of like the first indicators for people. There could be others, but maybe they're not quite aware. But the low libido can be that warning sign or that red flag that, wait a minute, I used to have a good libido. Now I don't. What's going on? And that's those adrenals just being pushed to their limit. And they can't make that testosterone anymore. So, you know, there's different ways to figure out where you're at on that stress response curve. If you're, you know, in the alarm phase, if you're in the resistance phase or the exhaustion phase.
And another really important thing to really be aware of, especially when you're in perimenopause, and sometimes it's nice to be aware of it before you're in perimenopause, is the fact that as we go into menopause and as our ovaries are not producing the same amount of estrogen and progesterone that they normally would, when that production of our hormones goes down, we should be depending on a certain amount of estrogen and progesterone and testosterone production by our adrenal glands. But if our adrenal glands are at a low capacity because they've had so much stimulation and demand on them to produce cortisol, then we're not going to get that buffer of those other sex hormones. And then you can really kind of crash when you're going into menopause. And again, that can even cause more symptoms than there normally would be.
For sure. So we want to be proactive about our adrenal health. I see that so often in practice. I'm sure you do too. So if women have had really, you know, stressful lives, there's been signs their adrenal glands have been out of balance for a while, they're more likely to have worse perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms. So the sooner you can recognize your imbalances and start to correct them through lifestyle, nutritional changes, supporting sleep, herbal support, etc., the better you're going to do through those transitional periods of perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah. And, you know, and then comes to an important point of how do you figure out what your adrenal function is like, or how do you know how much stress is impacting your body and how much imbalance you're having around your stress hormones. And there are a few different tests that can be done to figure that out. Now, there are certain blood and urine and saliva tests, and we can kind of go into more specifics around that. But first, I even want to just mention a couple of simple tests that we often will do with our patients in the office to see how their body is responding to stress. And one is looking at if there is any orthostatic hypotension. And what that means is, you know, checking your blood pressure and checking your blood pressure response from when you're going from lying down to standing up. Because if your body is in a certain amount of dysfunction with the adrenal glands and not having the proper response of adrenaline and cortisol, your blood pressure will drop when you stand up. And some people will know that this is happening when they are experiencing, you know, kind of lightheadedness, dizziness, or even kind of blacking out if they're going from sitting to standing or lying down to standing on a day-to-day basis. So that's something that can be tested in the office, or even if you know that you have that lightheadedness when you stand up, you most likely have a certain level of orthostatic hypotension that can give us an idea that you need some adrenal support may be a really good idea for you. There's another test where you can look at how your pupils respond to light. And if your pupils aren't able to constrict properly when there's a light shone in your eyes, then again, that can be a classic sign that your body is under a certain amount of stress that it's not properly regulating.
Totally. So your body can show you signs and symptoms, and then listening to some of those symptoms we talked about, like how's your digestion working? How are you sleeping? There's even some, you know, stress assessment questionnaires out there that can help, you know, help you gauge in a crude way where you might fall on that stress response curve as well. But if you really want to hit the nail on the head, you do want to get some testing done. So the best test for cortisol, so would be either urine or saliva. I really like the urine, and I know you do too, Tony, the Dutch test, the dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. And it's a snapshot over, I guess, over about 12 hours. So you take your first sample, like it's a urine test. You basically just urinate on a little piece of paper, let it dry, and you mail it off to the lab. But you do five different collections. So one at dinner time, one at bedtime, one in the middle of the night if you wake to urinate, one right when you wake up, and another sample 2 hours later. So you're seeing what's happening over a time period with your cortisol, because it does fluctuate throughout the day. So you can't just take one value. That's not going to give you enough information. And that Dutch test also tells us how you're metabolizing or breaking down your cortisol. So you might make a lot of it, but then you might actually break it down really quickly, so it doesn't have that much of an effect in your body. Or you might make a little bit of it and you don't metabolize it too much. So you might actually feel like you have a bit more than it looks like you do. So it gives you a more full picture of what's going on with your cortisol. And then you can also use it for, you know, female hormones, your melatonin levels, even markers of vitamin and mineral status. But at the very basic, you can do it for the cortisol and the cortisol metabolites. The saliva test is another good option because you can collect saliva. You basically just fill a test tube up with your saliva, half full without bubbles, four times throughout the day. And then you ship that off to the lab too. But it doesn't test the metabolites, but it'll tell you your cortisol levels throughout the day so you can see what your curve is. And people find it usually pretty shocking to see. Like, some people are just totally bottomed out and they're burnt out and they're like, oh, that explains why I'm feeling this way. You know, I started to think my family members and friends thought, you know, I was losing my mind. It was just, you know, I was just depressed. And sometimes they are, but also obviously with low cortisol, you don't have motivation. You're burnt out. So they like to see there's a real reason for the way that they're feeling. Or those that are really tired and wired and anxious, their cortisol may stay higher in the afternoon or get a bit higher at night. And they're like, that's why I can't settle down. That's why I'm tired and wired and I can't sleep. But we do need to look at cortisol and adrenal health in relation to the thyroid and the ovaries too. So it's a triad. They're all related together. So you don't want to treat just one in isolation. You want to evaluate thyroid through blood tests. We've talked about that before. Female hormones is ideal to do as well, either through the Dutch or the saliva test. And then also the cortisol levels. Because for example, for me, when my cortisol was really, really high, then your thyroid tries to pick up the slack and then your thyroid can tank too. And you need the right amount of cortisol for your thyroid to work. And then Tony talked about the effects on the female hormones. So you want to work at all of the hormones together. It's a complicated web. So it's not like, let's just fix cortisol. It's like, how did you get here? What else is out of balance?
Absolutely. And something to really also keep in mind that I wanted to throw in, Lisa, is, you know, it's again, really important to get that, you know, 4 or 5 point testing of your cortisol levels. I've had patients where their doctors have looked at or tried to look at what their cortisol levels are, you know, if they're having a lot of fatigue. And, you know, they'll often order something like a 24-hour urine test where they're just collecting their urine over 24 hours and then looking at the level of cortisol in there. But you're not getting, again, a full picture of that daily rhythm of the cortisol and how it should be higher at certain points of the day and lower at certain points of the day. So if you're just getting one collection, you're not getting the full picture.
No, that's a good point. So just to be clear, they're collecting in one container, right? And that's where they get the cortisol level from. So it's not like separate sample containers for each time they're urinating. So it's all muddied together.
For sure. And another test that, you know, is available to kind of conventional family doctors is doing a blood test to look at your cortisol level in your blood in the morning. And again, that you can get some information from that test, but it's very limited because especially when we're thinking about going to go get our blood drawn, it's typically a pretty stressful event. Not a lot of people are relaxed when they're going to go get their blood taken. So, I mean, it can be useful to see if you're able to kind of mount that cortisol response, but it's, you know, it's very limited because it really is an artificial, kind of environment and stimulation when you're getting that test done.
Yeah, really good point. So you need to get a more comprehensive test done that's looking at those different times of the day. That's really key.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we talked about, what is happening in your body, the negative effects, and what are some testing. So we'll cover some things you can start to do about it. One of the biggest things you can do for your adrenal glands is have a regular routine. So as you see with kids and toddlers, if they get out of their routine with eat and sleep schedules, mayhem happens, everything falls apart. So you want to go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, eat meals at the same time. So have a pretty boring life, but that's so good for your adrenal glands. You want to make sure you're getting enough sleep and good quality sleep. So at least aiming for 7 hours, maybe 8, but you want to have you want to fall asleep within the first half an hour. You want to stay asleep, or if you wake up to urinate, you fall asleep soon after. And then when you wake up, ideally right before your alarm, and you feel rested, you're ready to take the day on and get out of bed. So that can be a good sign of adrenal health. But yeah, that's the top thing you can do for your adrenals is sleep. And then also getting in daylight and movement in the day is a really good, those are really good foundational pieces too. So as we mentioned, getting out into the sunlight, you know, if you can exercise in the morning, that's best for your cortisol rhythm, because if you exercise too late at night, that can cause it to peak at night, and then you can have a hard time sleeping, and then it's a whole vicious cycle. And even looking at the right types of exercise. So we talked about before different times of your menstrual cycle over the month. There's phases where you're better equipped to handle more, you know, higher intensity workouts or more strength training. Like definitely right before your period and when you have your flow, this is the time to do more relaxing type exercises, yoga, walking. And then when you, after your flow and leading up to ovulation, this is when your testosterone is starting to increase. So you're going to get benefits from doing strength training and HIIT, because you're going to be able to build that muscle mass and you have the energy and the stamina to do it. So you're not forcing your body to try to do intense things when it doesn't feel like it, because that can affect that cortisol curve as well. And we see so many people come into our offices that are over exercising. And that could be, though, I'm working out, you know, someone comes in, they're like, I'm working out 6 days a week, an hour each day, and they're all high intensity workouts, and I rinse and repeat every week. Well, we really need to have those rest days. We really need to listen to our body, because that can get us in a high state of cortisol too. And for me, it's actually pretty interesting when I was going through the postpartum period and, you know, recovering from not sleeping and working on breastfeeding, my body just couldn't do the exercise I used to do. I used to do pretty intense workouts. It was always about, you know, intervals with running, pushing myself harder and harder with each workout. But for me, I was already in such a state of high cortisol and stress that it just felt wrong. I knew it was going to add to me. I already felt like I was running a marathon. So I needed to do more yoga and walking. But sometimes when we're in that high cortisol phase, we just want to do as much as possible. So we're over-exercising, we're not sleeping, and that's just going to feed forward the cortisol response and then make us sick, make it difficult to lose weight. It can be a really vicious cycle.
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about like times like this, I know for myself during this time, not only with the pandemic, but I mean, also with a toddler running around, I don't want to burn myself out by doing, exercise that's too intense or too aggressive. So I typically stick to, you know, doing walks, doing stretching, more kind of low intensity exercise. So that's really something to kind of pay attention to. And also really looking at, some of those behaviors that may not be super healthy when it comes to dealing with stress, kind of looking at your go-tos. If you want to really support your adrenal glands, you would really want to limit or avoid things like caffeine or alcohol or sugar, some of those go-tos that may be some of your coping mechanisms for stress. And look for, again, more positive ways to manage your stress. Again, those low intensity exercise, but even things like mindfulness, meditation, doing journaling, so that you can really properly and deal with the worry, the negative thoughts, any rumination that may be happening in a really healthy, positive way for your body.
Mm-hmm. That's key. And even reaching out for therapy, counseling, you know, especially during this time and other times too, I think everybody can benefit, but having a professional help you navigate those thoughts and support you with providing strategies and ways to work through them. And there is in Canada now, it's called Wellness Together Canada. So it's a free online resource that you fill out a short assessment questionnaire. It takes about 3 minutes, and then they can hook you up with different practicing therapists for free, online apps and resources. So definitely check out Wellness Together Canada. It's really there to support all of us through this time with mental health support. So we'll link to that in the show notes for sure. So definitely key to work on that mental, emotional aspect. And then we work on a lot of the physical supports as naturopathic doctors to help your body become more resilient and build up those adrenal glands. So like Tony said, the caffeine, the alcohol, that depletes our adrenal glands, not only because they're diuretics and we urinate out a lot of the nutrients that we need to support adrenal gland health, but caffeine can give us a boost. So we can basically get a lot of cortisol out really quickly, so we feel a burst, but then it's emptying our gas tank so we can crash later. And then alcohol puts us on that blood sugar roller coaster. And when your blood sugar dips, you actually release cortisol too. So it's key from a nutritional aspect to balance blood sugars. And we've talked about that in so many other episodes, so you can listen back. But in terms of physical support, so you definitely want to eat well, and then you want to make sure you're hydrated, because dehydration can be a physical stress on the body. A lot of people shifted to a low salt diet. If you're eating out a lot, you're probably not in that boat. But if you're making a lot of food at home, you might not be getting enough salt in, and you need salt to regulate your blood pressure too. And it does give you a bit of energy, and then you're getting some, iodine, some nutrients to help with the thyroid too. So putting, a pinch or a quarter of a teaspoon of salt in your glass of water in the morning can be really beneficial. And then the basic nutrients that nourish and build up the adrenal glands include vitamin C, a good B complex. B5 is especially important for adrenal health, but all the B vitamins really are. A good quality magnesium. I know you love magnesium too, Tony. This really helps to relax our nervous system, may help us get into that parasympathetic state, but of course having those tools like meditation and mindfulness are always really key. And then there are herbs called adaptogens that help your body become more resilient to stress, to handle it more effectively. So I think we have some favorite herbs there, right? Tony, did you want to start with that?
Oh, absolutely. Because, and just even to build on what you were saying, I really think of, vitamin C, B vitamins, magnesium, adaptogens as a way to kind of refuel your gas tank. This is a way to really build up your physical resources so that you can handle that stress, so that stress can be more tolerable, because it takes a lot of energy to be in the stress response. So that's where, the B vitamins, the vitamin C, the magnesium can be easily depleted. So yes, you're right, Lisa. Magnesium is one of my favorite supplements to recommend, because, with all of us having so much stress in our lives, I really think of a lot of us being magnesium depleted, and being having a magnesium deficiency. So those nutrients are important. And yes, I really have some favorite herbs that are adaptogens. This is kind of a whole family of plants that help to nourish our adrenal glands and help us to really recover from stress and to adapt to those stresses. That adaptation is a real key, because, like I said in the beginning, it's not like these stresses are going to go away. We have to learn to adapt to them. And there's some wonderful herbs that help us do that. A lot of people think of like the ginsengs as supportive for energy, and they can be really helpful. My favorite ginseng is the Siberian ginseng or Eleutherococcus. There's also ashwagandha, which is kind of known as an Indian ginseng, which is really beneficial for stress, but also helping to manage some of the impact of stress when it comes to kind of fatigue and impact on mood and also the immune system. Rhodiola is a wonderful herb. Holy basil or tulsi is fantastic. There's so many other ones. I don't know. What are some of your favorite adaptogens, Lisa?
Yeah, those are great too. Yeah, I love holy basil. If people are really depleted in cortisol or low cortisol, yeah, that rhodiola is great. Licorice, although you have obviously talked to a healthcare practitioner before you take any of these, because that can impact your blood pressure. If it, can make it go up a little bit. So it's good if you have low blood pressure, but it can interact with medication. So licorice and rhodiola, if you're more on that low cortisol, Laura, if you're more on that high cortisol and having trouble sleeping. Maca is another good adaptogen we use a lot, especially with female hormonal imbalances and low libido. Different mushrooms like reishi, for example. So sometimes you can take these in combination too. There's a lot of adrenal support products, but you want to know where you are on that stress response curve. You want to talk to your naturopathic doctor, your healthcare professional, to make sure these herbs are right for you. You could even take what's called a glandular, so an adrenal gland concentrate. I know it sounds gross and weird, from a bovine source, a cow source. So it actually allows your own adrenals to repair while you're giving your body what it's not making. So that's more if you're in that low cortisol phase. But a lot of the herbs you mentioned, Tony, are more the adaptogens, where it helps to balance it out, whether it's high or low. But there are some herbs that are more specific to either help increase or reduce. But of course, the lifestyle changes and looking at all the hormones together is really key. We don't want to treat, high cortisol or low cortisol in isolation either.
Absolutely. It really is important to look at things. And that's where, some of those herbs are, really gentle in terms of modulating things. And I even think about when, there are women in my practice who are having, chronic stress and hormonal imbalances, some things like herbs like shatavari or even schizandra can be really gentle and supportive as well to manage that imbalance and stress as well. Mm-hmm. But that's important to really, the more guidance you have and the more you can really see where you're at to get the right solutions for you is really key.
Yeah. And one of the most simple things you can do right now is get out for a walk in a forest or in nature. So there's been more and more studies on the benefits of forest bathing, and they're showing the compounds that are released from like the pine and the cypress, those essential oils that you smell, can help to lower the adrenaline secreted in your urine, which means you're making less adrenaline in general. So just getting out into nature, being a tree hugger, touching trees while social distancing, smelling that fresh, clean air, can be a huge reset for the adrenal glands as well.
Awesome. And again, those are all kind of different tips that you can kind of take in and see how you can fit them into, again, whether it's your daily rhythm or even just your weekly schedule as well. It's a matter of really taking what you can and trying things out, one at a time, so that it's not too overwhelming.
For sure. Yeah. Just start with one. If it's, this week I'm going to go to bed 15 minutes earlier, or this week I'm going to get out in nature like 20 minutes, two or three times a week, just start with that.
Absolutely. So can we completely switch gears now, Lisa? And can I talk about my supermom moment?
Let's do it. What was so great about this week, Tony? What's your supermom moment that happened?
Well, Frankie's hair has been like growing longer and longer. We haven't cut it yet. And she's typically been very resistant to me putting her hair up, even in barrettes. But this week, I finally figured out that the best time to have her hair done would be when we're letting her watch a little bit of cartoons. We let her watch some nursery rhyme cartoons. So this morning, and also yesterday, you know, she was sitting there watching cartoons, and I managed to get her hair in pigtails for the first time.
Oh my gosh, I got to see a picture.
Yeah. Now, again, her daddy was able to do it ahead of time. And so that's partly what was kind of the impetus for me even like thinking to try it out. He definitely got pictures. I put her hair in pigtails yesterday, got her in a dress, and I didn't even get a picture taken. So,
Oh well. I know it's hard, right? We forget about these things. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But at least, Davin got a picture. So
exactly. And, you know, maybe I'll get a picture in the future too.
Oh, well, I'm sure it looks adorable. That's so sweet.
Yeah, it was fun. How about you, Lisa? Now, I know you're doing awesome, and sometimes there might be a mess up or so.
Oh yeah, there are mess ups, that's for sure. There's a pretty big one, kind of funny. Hopefully it doesn't turn out bad, that happened this morning. So I took Stuart this morning. It's a Monday morning, so it's not as busy, you know, if we go to the parks. Or so I took Stuart to Taylor Creek Park, which is near us here. And we were having a blast, so it wasn't too busy. He was riding his balance bike. We were staying off to the side on the grass to keep room from people. But we went down, there was part that was like a lower part near the creek where there was like a little mini waterfall, probably like a foot. And he was throwing sticks in there and rocks, and he was getting closer and closer. And I was kind of sitting back just watching him. And in my head, I'm like, this could turn out bad, but I'm not going to like be overbearing. I'm just going to let him play. And, you know, he should be able to figure out that he shouldn't get too close to the edge. Well, next thing I know, he's face down in the water. It was very shallow, very shallow, thank God. But he was like in shock. So he quickly stood up, and I ran over and grabbed him, and he was soaked, and he was, you know, crying a bit, I think, because it scared him. He wasn't hurt, and, you know, he wasn't in very deep, but he was just soaked and in shock. So he wanted me to change him. And another mess up was that he's still wearing some pull-ups. So I only had a pull-up in my backpack. I didn't have a change of clothes because he doesn't seem to have accidents when we go out. He hasn't had those for a long time. So I was like, oh, I don't need any extra clothes. And he's like, mommy, I want to be changed. I'm soaking. And water was squishing out of his shoes. But I said, sorry, sweetie, we got to ride your bike back and we'll change you into your other like pull-up once we get to the car. So with some prodding, he finally, you know, rode back and we got back to the car, and then I got him in his pull up, and then I didn't want the car seat to cut into his like naked chest. So luckily I had a towel in the back seat. So I just put that under the strap so he wasn't getting, you know, cut from the straps there. But I just hope he didn't ingest any of the water, and I hope he doesn't have any little diarrhea or GI issues after. But I've been giving him some gentle herbs for kids for GI support. So fingers crossed it doesn't turn into something worse. But it was actually pretty cute and pretty funny. But the funny thing was, I had a dream last night that he fell into a pool and I had to dive in after him. So I probably should have not let him get that close to the water. Maybe that was some mom intuition.
But at least it was just the creek and not the pool. Poor little guy.
Totally. I know. Yeah, it was really shallow. So anyway, aww. He's okay in the end. And he's like, he wanted to go swimming. So he's like, I got to go swimming in the creek.
So a bonus. That's a bonus, right, to the mess up was he got to go swimming, kind
That's
of.
That's right. He got to cool down because it was so hot. Anyway, so that was my mess up. But Tony, I want to hear, what's your mama must have for the week?
Well, so we're talking about stress. So definitely my mama must have for this week is, you know, something that can help you to get into that parasympathetic nervous system response, that spa in your mind. And one of my favorites is tea. It's a nice, gentle way of getting some of those herbs that can really get you into the spa. And one of my favorite blends is called the Stress Soother by Traditional Medicinals. It has skullcap and cinnamon and ginger. It's just really nourishing for the nervous system and really helps to support that relaxation. How about
you,
Lisa?
Sounds like a good one. Yeah, I haven't tried that one. I'll have to give it a go with the cinnamon and the ginger. That sounds delicious.
It's very lovely.
Ooh, well, I'll share some of my favorite spa moment teas as well. So I really like the traditional medicinal brands too. And they have a really good chamomile and lavender tea. So that's good if you're feeling a bit wired up at night and you need something to help settle you down. Same with their lemon balm tea is really good as well. Really calming. And it has a really nice fresh taste to it. It's part of the mint family. It doesn't quite taste like mint, but it's kind of like a cross between mint and lemon. You don't want to have too much of that if you have a thyroid issue though. And then my other one I think I've talked about before is Tulsi tea, otherwise known as holy basil. So that's a great one. You steep one bag for 10 minutes or longer in the evening. Really great if you're wired or if you've done an evening workout to help you be able to settle down and get a good sleep.
Awesome. Those are all lovely teas for everyone to try as well. And again, I really think of them as really important mama must-haves.
They are. And you can have them iced too. If it's really hot outside, they're really delicious iced. So steep it in boiling water, let it cool down, put it in the fridge. You can add lemon or lime, a bit of honey if you need to. So that's a really nice treat.
Oh, good tip, Lisa. So thanks everyone for joining us today. All of the notes that we have are on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. So check us out there. You can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review and 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Thanks, and join us again.
Yeah, thanks. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.